We'll give you more practical thoughts and updates on the coronavirus, and then speak with a worship leader in California who decided to run for political office.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Yes, as we serve as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. What a wild world we are living in today. How things continue to change on a dime. Went to the store yesterday just to get some produce, and the store, the grocery store, I often shop, is basically out of almost everything. In all the produce and all the organic, and the truck was delayed and so on, but I'd never seen it like that. In the midst of the hoard buying and everything going on with the virus, you think, whoa, this is wild. Now, different states saying no gatherings of more than 10 people, the nation of Israel saying that. We live in a wild day, and yet God's word remains firm. God himself remains our rock and refuge. So we want to give you words of wisdom, want to offer some spiritual reflections. And then the bottom half of the hour, we're going to be joined by California worship leader Sean Foyt, who decided that he had to run for Congress. Now, he was not successful in his first bid, but he decided he had to run for a seat in California and make a difference and try to be a positive agent of change. So we're going to have a great show today. So glad to have you listening, watching. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I just seconds ago, immediately before the show started, posted a poll on Twitter. Again, all I want to know is what you're thinking. That's all I want to know. What are you thinking? So I asked the question, what is your understanding of the coronavirus? Is it a purely natural phenomenon? Was it developed in a lab? Is it a satanic attack? Is it a divine judgment? I just want to know what you're thinking, what you're understanding. Feel free to call in if you feel that you have insight. I'm going to share some very interesting things with you in a little while, all right? But if you think you have some real insight, we'd love to hear it. Love to hear your viewpoint. If you studied, looked at this, if you have a spiritual insight. Four choices I gave here online were, again, just natural phenomenon. I don't mean that God is uninvolved with nature, but it happened through circumstances in a fallen world. Or was it developed in a lab? Is this some kind of bioweapon or some experiment that went wrong? Is it a satanic attack? The enemy trying to destroy lives? All right. Or is it divine judgment? I put those questions out, interested to see the responses. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. Do you remember, if you're my age, turned 65 yesterday, do you remember the sci-fi classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still? Came out in 1951. There was a remake 2008. I didn't see the remake, but I did see the original. I imagine I saw it more than once. It was kind of a classic movie back then. I was born in 55, so the movie was known and was out. And here, let me play a clip from the movie for you.
The ship is now resting exactly where it landed 2 hours ago, and so far there is no sign of life from inside it. Troops have been rushed across the Potomac River from Fort Myer and have thrown a cordon around the ship. They're supported by tanks, artillery, and machine guns. Behind the police lines, there's a huge crowd of curiosity seekers. The Army has taken every precaution to meet any emergency which may develop. Every eye, every weapon is trained on the ship. It's been that way for 2 hours, and the tension is just beginning. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Something is happening. The spaceship portal opens and an alien, a space suit comes walking out. He's Klaatu. He's accompanied by an 8-foot robot named Gort. Yeah, these were the names. They were aliens after all. And they came with an international message. They came with a message from the universe, basically saying, listen, Now that you've developed these weapons of mass destruction, remember this is immediately after World War II, now that you've developed these deadly weapons and these rockets that can take so many lives, you're going to have to put them down. You are going to have to pursue peace or the Earth will be obliterated. Well, that's the beginning of the plot. It ends up as a sign that this is a serious message. They shut everything down. The Earth stands still for a day. Everything gets shut down. You can't move. You can't. Elevators stop in their tracks. Cars stop in their tracks. Things stop working. They just shut it down to say, get the message. Get the message. So it struck me that suddenly we're in a situation. No, it's not that extreme. But you're talking about where you normally have rush hour in certain cities, no rush hour. You're talking about people planning a wedding for a year and the wedding's postponed. You're talking about stadiums empty. You're talking about people that 1 week were planning their vacation, next week figuring out how are we going to pay our bills and feed our family. You're talking about situations in Italy where they can't cremate the bodies fast enough. Yet this is happening. Sudden, dramatic change out of the blue. Out of the blue. And on this level, unprecedented in our lifetimes. In terms of, say, the whole sports world could just be suspended for months. Don't know when things are going to change. And now edicts coming down. Governments saying you can't have more than 10 people gathering in public together. Restaurants shutting, other places of business shutting, stores, etc. One after another, after another, after another, to stop this from spreading. You say, but the numbers aren't that bad yet. You don't know how many people are actually infected, but the thing is, this is to stop it from spreading and to get it under control, hence the radical measures. So it struck me that a lot of things can turn on a dime. You know, I'm looking at the state of America, and I'm always looking from a spiritual perspective first and foremost, right? You're looking at the nation, and you think, what's going to get us to our knees, and what's going to get us praying, and what's going to get us crying out to God? Or could anything unite us? You know, you look at these things, they seem so impossible, so far-fetched. I'm always looking from the viewpoint of revival, of awakening. What's it going to take to get the church crying out? We're so complacent, we're so caught up with the things of this world. We are often more interested in sports and entertainment than the things of God. I don't think I'm exaggerating the least in saying that. It's just so much the state of the American church, so much complacency, so much compromise, so much worldliness, all right? And we have so much, and we've gotten soft in so many ways, and we've just got this man-pleasing, everything's going to be good, happy, happy gospel, kind of like a positive life coach message as opposed to the biblical gospel. It's the world that we live in, and you think, what's going to get us thinking differently? What's it going to take? And you don't want a crisis to come. You don't want there to be an economic collapse or a plague or war. You don't want crisis to come. You want people to awaken because they're hungry for God. You want people to awaken because they want God to move. You want people to awaken because they become conscious of sin. But we're so unconscious of so much of this, and even the concept of judgment and shaking, and it's very, very foreign to us. Let the truth be told. And yet suddenly, everything shifts. Now, I don't mean all of America's in prayer right now. I don't mean that everyone's crying out to God. But suddenly, things have shifted. Suddenly, overnight, really. I mean, a very, very short period of time, things have shifted in ways that we are not used to, that the world is not used to. And it makes you realize nothing's certain. Not just our next breath, but nothing in the world is certain. Tomorrow is not guaranteed to look anything like today, which is all the more reason that we need to have our spiritual roots down deep and live in the light of eternity. Let me read something to you that pastor and evangelist Rodney Howard Brown has put out. Rodney Howard Brown was one that early on said that Donald Trump was going to be the president and that God was raising him up to combat the New World Order. Sounds conspiratorial, you know, wonder. But Rodney's been looking at these things for years, and he's a revivalist, he's an evangelist. And he put something out that's been widely shared. I was sent a link to someone else sharing it on Facebook. So whether you agree with his views or not, he said this is not a conspiracy theory. It's been playing out for years. So here's what he says. I talked about what is coming more than 10 years. The people in our church are ready for this. Therefore, nothing of what is happening now is a surprise to me. Every god of America has fallen. Sports have fallen. Hollywood has fallen. Television shows canceled. Even the god of some megachurch has fell. These churches are empty today. I have warned for years that churches will disappear in one night. He says, I hold in my hands the Rockefeller Organization document, which was published in 2010. Here is the script we met today. What is happening now is not an accident. Everything was planned. Now, you can agree with Rodney about things being planned or not, but I just want you to hear this out. Bill Gates talked about the pandemic 4 years ago. The document is called Scenario for Future Technology and International Development, 53 pages. It says here that the result of this scenario will be, quote, 20% of the world's population will be infected. People's mobility will be blocked. Airports will be closed. Sports events will be canceled. Shops closed. Theaters closed. Churches astounded. A pandemic will produce shortages, including disinfectants and toilet paper. If people refuse the vaccine, they will not be allowed to travel. Political assemblies will be illegal. Public protests will be banned. Martial law will be introduced, and the new global control system will come into effect. People around the world will be open to sharing their security rights. And then skip down a little bit. He says, what is written in the book of Revelation is printed. Globalists lead us to a single government, a single monetary system, and the coming of Antichrist. And I believe that God raised Trump to suspend it. Okay. You can agree or disagree with Rodney Howard Brown about this being planned. You can agree or disagree about God raising up Trump to combat a new world order of this kind. But what's very clear is that people have been predicting a scenario like this, whether they're planning it or just forecasting what's going to happen, and that you could easily see how suddenly, through a real plague or hardship way, way, way beyond what we're experiencing now, that suddenly the whole world could come under one world leader or one world power or an antichrist system. You know, here, if you don't have a vaccine, maybe you'll be, you can't do certain things if that happens, if such a scenario happens. So again, all I'm saying is this gets our attention so that we understand how things could shift overnight, how the world could look very, very different, and how perhaps America could be crying out for the revival and the awakening that we've been speaking about, could be crying out desperately for that in a way that a month ago we didn't see. It's a wild time, but it's a time that gets you reflecting. It's a time that gets you to pray like you never prayed. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Going to go to the phones in a moment. Again, posted this poll on Twitter right before the show started, so 19 minutes ago, maybe. What is your own understanding of the coronavirus? Is it a purely natural phenomenon? Was it developed in a lab? Is it a satanic attack, a divine judgment? And, we just posted those watching. First 188 votes. 33% say natural phenomenon. 38.8% say developed in a lab. 10%, 10.1% satanic attack. 18.1% divine judgment. Interesting. So that means basically 72% of those responding do not look at this as specifically a satanic attack or divine judgment. Just interesting in terms of the responses so far. All right, let's go to Patty in Mooresville, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello, Patty, are you there? I guess not. Okay, so one other interesting thing before I go to another call that will be related to what I'm about to say. It's very easy when you have a crisis to scapegoat, all right? And, you know, China's trying to scapegoat America, and is America rightly blaming China? Or Turkey, Iran, trying to blame Israel, and various things like this. It's easy to see if you have, say, an economic collapse, which we don't have right now, but let's say you had an economic collapse, or you had a real plague, and people dying in the streets, and putting the fear factor 10 times, 100 times greater than it is right now, very easy to scapegoat a group, an individual, very, very easy. Next thing, you'll have crowds burning down buildings, hoarding people, to gathering people together and attacking them. Crazy, wild things. So no surprise that some Muslim nations are trying to blame Israel for this. No surprise. That's what happens. That's how anti-Semitism raises its head. That's how different people groups get scapegoated at different times in history, and blood is shed over lies. Listen, I remember, I'm just trying to get the year straight. Okay, late 80s, early 90s. We were vacationing with some friends that had a home on a lake in Virginia. And the husband of the family was a former Green Beret from Vietnam, served in Vietnam. And there was a lot of talk at that particular time about Christians stockpiling goods. You know, there was going to be a crisis coming. There was going to be some terrible thing happening. And we should stockpile goods and things like that. So he asked the question. He said, let me ask you this. He said, I got two questions, actually. Number one, are you stockpiling goods for yourself or for your neighbor? Because you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself if you're a Christian, right? He said, number two, if it's for yourself, he said, are you also stockpiling weapons? He said, because I'm telling you, I've lived in it. He said, I've been in countries stricken by famine. He said, because if people find out you have food, unless you stockpile weapons, they're going to come take your food. In other words, you have to shoot them first. A lot of our thinking, friends, I think, fails to realize how desperate human beings can get, what crazy things they will believe. Here, for the Trump critics, that you'll have a crisis like this and Trump will emerge, that he'll save us from the crisis and get the economy strong, and then it sets up like a Hitler-type scenario. That's what the Trump haters will say. And then others on the other side will say, no, Trump is the only answer in the earth right now to stop this one-world takeover. And you could easily see that people could believe all kinds of different things. Could you not? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Justice in Niagara Falls, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. My wife and I are Messianic. We had attended local synagogues in Buffalo for a while, so. I believe that's where I first heard of you, but my question is, how can we, as believers in the Messiah, become strengthened and empowered, wise to discerning, and employ strategy to overcome, in America, anti-Semitism at its deepest level, at its root?
Yeah, so, Justice, it's an important question, because anti-Semitism is raising its head once again now around the world and even in the Church of America, and must be combated. I would encourage everyone first to get educated themselves. Believers need to be educated in terms of history and in terms of spiritual reality. So my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the new edition of the 92 book coming out last year, is important. Let every Christian read it and understand how anti-Semitism has come into church history in ugly and horrific ways, ultimately paving the way for the possibility of a Holocaust, how anti-Semitism is a spiritual phenomenon that cannot simply be fought with truth, although truth is a big weapon, but it also must be fought with prayer and with love. And so we get educated first. We share the truth with others. We go out of our way to expose lies. So share the truth, expose lies, and then deal with this in prayer. Ask God to turn the tide. Come against demonic powers of deception and ask God to deliver and protect his people. I mention that in the context now of Israel gets blamed for certain things in certain countries with the coronavirus. This is what happens. Jews get scapegoated. It doesn't mean that, that Israel's a perfect country, Jews are perfect people. No, Israel, Jews, like everybody else, all right? The reality is, though, that there is a target on the back of Israel, on the back of the Jewish people, Satan wanting to wipe out the Jewish people and thereby make God into a liar, because God promised the perpetuity of the Jewish people as a people until the end of the age. And Satan understands that a Jewish Jerusalem, a Jewish leadership, must welcome back the Messiah before he establishes his kingdom on the earth. All the more effort then does the enemy make to divide the Jewish people, keep them away from the Messiah, keep them out of Jerusalem. So this must be combated spiritually, but then also by speaking the truth and by exposing the lies. I've got another book that will come out in September, God willing, on combating anti-Semitism in the church today. So Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the whole history right up until today, the theology, it's a must-read. And then this will be a supplement to it, just focusing on what's happening today. Hey, thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Adam in Utah. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
My question is, so at what point do we start laying hands on the lepers without fear of getting sick?
Yeah, it's a question that the church has dealt with through the centuries, often ministering to people in the midst of plague. I read some quotes about that yesterday, often determining not to flee, not to run, but to stay in the midst of epidemic, to serve in compassionate ways, even if it means death, and to pray for miracles. So the first thing is that we want to follow guidelines, government guidelines, not primarily for our own safety, but for the safety of others. In other words, the issue is maybe you're a young, healthy person. It's highly unlikely that you'll get sick, but you could become a carrier, say with the virus, right? You could become a carrier and bring it to someone else. So the reason that we're complying with the restrictions is not just for our own safety, but primarily for the safety of others. That being the case, you have healthcare workers that are going to come in contact with sick people. And I would first say, if you are in contact with anyone that's sick, that you should immediately pray for them. That should, our first thought should be, oh, you're sick, let me pray for you. That should be the very first thought that comes to mind. The other thing is this, that we must build ourselves up in God so that we know that we know that we know that we are strong in faith. And then from that vantage point of being strong in faith and with a director from the Lord, we go and obey. Here, I'll give you an example. I've been in situations where I knew if I went into a certain country that I might not get out alive because the country was in a civil war. And when I prayed about going into one country, in that setting, Liberia, in the, probably the early 90s, I heard the Lord say to me, travel at your own risk. In other words, you go in there, you've got no guarantee of protection. And the missionary said, you can get in, you may not get out. And I knew I wasn't to go, that it would be foolish, that I would be walking into danger. And the missionaries there barely got out with their lives. I've had other times, like in India, where we knew Hindu radicals were in the crowd and that they had been violent and killed many people in a neighboring village. Lower caste people, untouchables in a neighboring village years earlier. So they were radical and they were violent. And I prayed and felt clearly from the Lord, go in the midst of it and preach. And I knew, I didn't think we'd get killed, but I knew that there could be a violent attack. We might get blacklisted from getting back in the country. And perhaps there was a threat of death, but I went right into it because I felt God sent me there to preach. And we went in and the meeting second night was taken over by radicals and they shut everything down and we weren't hurt. But it's all a matter of knowing the voice and will of God. First, you have to know that you know that you're strong in faith. If you're walking in fear, then you've got to separate yourself. But let us pray for opportunities and then the leading of the Lord to go and minister. But be sure whatever you do, it's not going to make you vulnerable to being a carrier that's going to hurt someone else. There's a fine line. Let us be people of faith, the people who know the will of God, and people who act in wisdom. Hey, thank you for the call.
LifeWire.com.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Some interesting responses to a poll that I posted on Twitter. What is your own understanding of the coronavirus? Is it a purely natural phenomenon? Was it developed in a lab? Is it a satanic attack, a divine judgment? Just to give you an idea of what people are thinking, Kendra said, natural phenomenon exacerbated by a communist government. Michael, it was developed in a lab, but we've already had wars and rumors of wars. Now we're having pestilence and famine. Keep an eye out for earthquakes. Here, let me just find here. Developed by CIA bioweaponry research and development at Fort Detrick, Maryland, for targeting China and Iran. Divine judgment is that it came home to destroy America. Karma. I'm just reading these to let you know some people's responses to the phenomenon. For sure, we must step back as God's people and reflect. Let's say a few weeks from now, a few months from now, life goes back to relative normal, and sports back on, and big events back on, and restaurants filled, and the economy booming, and all of that. Let's just say that that's what happens, all right? We don't just want to go back to normal as God's people. We want to do more reflecting on living in the light of eternity. We want to do more reflecting on what it means to be a disciple. We want to do more reflecting on why we are here. Speaking of why we're here, I have now on the line with me Sean Foyt, 36 years old, married, kids, hey, got a dream life, worship leader at a mega church, and over a billion downloads of YouTube videos with music he's participated in, and for years, decades, you could give yourself to writing new songs, worshiping, bringing people to encounter Jesus, and not get involved in so much of the muck and the mire, politics of this world. And yet, Sean recently ran for political office, and he felt it was a divine calling to do so. So, want to talk this through and bring Sean on the air today. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire.
Of course. Great to be on here. Thank you.
So, Sean, obviously the whole nation thinking about the coronavirus and everything else, but we've been talking about it day and night as well. And I want to step back from that and look at some larger issues and why it is that you felt the need to get involved. And I think as we're in a national crisis now, all the more should the church rise up and make a difference. But share some of your history and what it is that moved you to go from just leading people to encounter Jesus, which is as heavenly a thing as you can imagine, to get involved in something so earthly as politics.
Well, to be honest, I never had a desire or a plan or a dream or even a trajectory in my life to do politics. I was always, you know, I've always been a man of conviction. And I've always been a leader that's been moved by injustice and my convictions. And that, you know, over the last 15 years, yeah, I've been leading worship and been an author and stuff like that. But I've actually pioneered missions movements that have invaded war zones. And I myself was in Iraq with my family at the height of ISIS. And, you know, we've gone into North Korea and we've gone into Afghanistan after 9/11, and we've kind of rushed into these really dark places around the world that we have been moved because of injustice. We've been moved because our convictions. We've been helping refugees. We've been, you know, bringing the love of Jesus in the midst of utter devastation. And I think over the last, probably the last year, as I'm a father with four kids now, and I look at the state of America and I look at the future of, you know, the handoff for my kids, you know, and what is the nation going to look like when they grow up? And you look at the full-on assault against the values and the convictions that I hold dear. I mean, even including the First Amendment, how that's being just eroded away on college campuses. I mean, I could go on and on. To me, kind of stepping up to the bat and doing this was really kind of,
it was just taking the next step, you know, other than a prayer rally or a service. And I've been a part of those. I've been helping lead stadiums of people to pray for these issues and stand in the gap for abortion and things like that. But I think for me, there had to be a point where we, you know, I kind of became the fulfillment of some of my own prayers, so to speak. And, you know, I did it because of concern, really, for the future. And wondering what America is going to look like for my kids, especially living here in California, which, you know, is it's oftentimes still left. It's you know, in the ocean left. And
yeah.
And it's been pioneering so many of the, and kind of setting the standard for a lot of the most anti-Christian and anti, all the things that we hold dear. They've been on the cutting edge of promoting that ideology. So I thought it would be significant to take a stand in this state and be part of the solution.
So, Sean, why do you think it is that so many of us will pray for political leaders and then support the election of a leader, some will endorse a leader, and things like that, but yet very few of us think of actually running for office? It's almost as if politics is off limits, politics is separate from ministry, politics is just dirty and bad. So some people are in it, we'll pray for them and support them, but we are not to get in it. Where do you think that mindset comes from?
Well, I mean, that was part of my frustration. You know, I feel like in the church right now, you know, that we have the Seven Mountain Mandate, and you know, we're finally developed theologies, you know, where we're excited about people like Kanye West in the entertainment world, you know, doing a worship album, and we want, you know, millionaires to get saved and movie stars to find Jesus, and you know, when the quarterback throws a touchdown and thanks God, you know, the church celebrates. But the church really doesn't know how to rally around sending somebody into the political realm. Like, and I know this because a big part of my strategy, and continues to be my strategy, is to rally the church to engage. And, you know, one of my favorite friends in here, Senator Shannon Groves, she's basically the top Republican in the state government, which is a supermajority, you know, Democrat. But I love what she says. We did a little tour around to some churches, and she says, you know, unless you come to the table, you end up on the menu.
Yeah.
and it really is true. I mean, you know, Christians can get on Facebook, and they can whine about the things, and they can get on Twitter, and they can, you know, be frustrated, but it takes a whole nother level to say, you know what, I'm going to engage. And I think that was my heart, you know, like, and I came out with learning quite a few things that I didn't know, but I'm glad that we took a stand, you know, I'm glad that we went for it.
Yeah, so you didn't win in this at least initial attempt, and we'll come back to that and some of the lessons you learned. But you mentioned Seven Mountains Mandate. To some Christians, that's a great thing. To some, it's this terrible heresy. I don't know how you're going to answer this question. It's the first time we've ever talked. But what does that mean? When you say Seven Mountains Mandate, what do you mean? What do you understand?
Well, I'm referring to the calling of, you know, the goal of the gospel, you know, to every sphere, to every society, I'm referring to the prophecy in Malachi 1:11, from the rising of the sun to the place where it's set. You know, incense will fill every place. You know, I believe that we're called as salt and light, you know, that we're called to invade every area of society. And I think that, you know, so many Christians are dualistic, and it's funny because if you look at the seven mountains, which I won't rattle them all off, but, you know, media and religion and arts and entertainment and business and education. And if you look at the one of them, government, the governmental mountain, it's the only mountain that has its tentacles in all other mountains. In other words, it's the only place of influence that regulates all other places of influence. And yet I found that it's the place where the church is least engaged and least permeated through. Now, having said that, I met some amazing believers. I met some amazing people in government. But still, the voice of the church is largely unheard. And I think, you know, you have to go back to, you know, Mike Huckabee, who kind of came out of the, a little bit out of the faith space, you know, Ben Carson. I mean, he was a
who's a brain surgeon, but he's definitely a strong believer. Obviously, Mike Pence was, you know, a Bible school teacher. You know, he had I had friends that took his Bible study course. But I mean, there's a lot of parts of government where there's just, and especially out here in California, where I just did not find other believers. And I felt like, man, this is just a bummer that we've created this really strange theology where this is a place where God can't invade, or this is a place where God doesn't want his voice to be heard. And I just don't agree with that.
Yeah, so again, friends, if you're hearing the word invade, what does that mean? Well, I understand it to mean that we preach the gospel everywhere and we seek to bring the influence of godly values and principles everywhere, that we don't abandon the educational system, we don't abandon the media, that
right.
We seek to live as Christian witnesses in the midst of it. You know, some hear it there that we will take over and impose Christianity on the nation and establish a theocracy. It's as strange for you to hear that as for me to hear it. For us, it's like, well,
no,
we could,
I don't,
you know, We complain, for example, about how bad things are, how left-wing the universities are and how radical they are and how the government is anti-this or anti-that. It's like, okay, well, then let's make a difference and let's get involved. I mean, it seems like common sense. As Christians, we're supposed to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. That means shine it wherever we can, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think the gospel, I mean, the Great Commission is not, it's not the great option. It's not optional. It's not... You know, it's a very aggressive terminology. You know, Jesus was telling the disciples, listen, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. You're going to be misunderstood. You're all going to die. I mean, he's a very pretty brutal commissioning, but he said, I've empowered you to go. And I just feel like, you know, we, especially I think what in the Western church, we definitely have a harder time with this than in, you know, I've been, you know, a good bit of the year in 20 different nations. And there's other cultures and nations that don't have this struggle. But in America, it seems like we do. And, you know, I mean, it's like, don't we want believers right now in those laboratories praying to God, asking to give them the antidote to this virus? Of course. Like, he's the creator of the world. He knows the solutions, and we're the ones that have access to them. So to come up with a mindset that you don't want believers to be a part of every facet of society is so anti-biblical, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we're going to be right back with Sean Foyt. I want to talk about a song he wrote with a great message about getting involved and then what he learned in his first attempt to run for political office, the good and the bad. Speaking with Sean Foyt, want to find out more? His name is spelled F-E-U-C-H-T.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is from Sean Foyt for Congress page. Career politicians in Congress can't be trusted to solve the problems they created. Career politicians have created a mess, and the rest of us have gotten stuck with the cleanup and the bill. He goes on to say, one thing is clear, more government isn't the solution. That's why Sean Foyt is running for Congress. Sean is the opposite of the 45-year incumbent currently serving California's 3rd Congressional District. Sean is a man of integrity and action who has found success as a businessman, missionary, and musician, producing and releasing 20 albums and authoring 5 books. Sean is not looking for a new job. He has plenty of those, but he is determined to bring integrity, hope, inspiration, and common sense to our nation's capital. So as a Christian, I'm looking at it, and I thought Sean was qualified. Why wouldn't I want someone with godly values? Again, the person has to be qualified and able to lead and function in the political realm, but why wouldn't I want someone that loves the Lord, someone that seeks to raise his family in a godly way, someone who holds to similar foundational biblical values that I hold to? Why wouldn't I want that voice influencing things rather than maybe a radical gay activist atheist that wants to shut down some of our liberties? So, Sean, as you got involved with this, was the attack against you, was the pushback in certain ways uglier or worse than you expected? What surprised you in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'll preface it all by saying that I've been in some pretty
dark places. I had mentioned before, you know, inside of North Korea, inside of Saudi. I've gone inside of Saudi a few times, in Iraq during the height of ISIS. I've really never been in a realm or a sphere that's really as dark in a sense as the political realm. And I think I was really, I really didn't expect that. I mean, I knew that it was going to be gnarly and people always, you know, politics just being dirty and all that stuff. But I mean, just the intense spiritual warfare, you know, the attacks of people coming against you. And really, I think the hardest thing is that it polarizes your whole world.
Yep.
You know, and you either, you know, you have, you know, either an R or a D to hang above your head. And, you know, and you know, most people, for the most part, like a missionary that goes into countries and helps people and writes songs. And I mean, it, you know, we're used to some pushback, but I mean, we're not used to pushback from our own friends. And I think that that's the part that was surprising, was it's kind of a great clarifying mechanism to figure out who your real friends are. And I'm a millennial, and I'm in the creative world a lot, you know, in the musician creative world. And, you know, there, you could see some definite, you know, some definite belief systems that wouldn't line up with me running as a Republican in California. So, you know, that was really, I was shocked. And I realized, and the other thing too is, Michael, is, you know, you have to raise $2 to $3 million to try to even make this
unreal.
A fight. And that is a heavy pressure. I mean, I've raised tons of money for orphans and refugees and rescuing kids out of the sex trade and a lot of things that we've done around the world. But, you know, to raise $2 to $3 million for a congressional race as a Republican in California, that's a whole nother thing. So, I mean, that was just an added dimension of pressure on top.
Yeah. And, you know, there are lots of things about the way President Trump conducts himself and treats others that I don't like, for obvious reasons. I also understand that again, I'm not justifying the behavior, but we have no idea the level of attack, battle, swamp that you're dealing with. And a lesser person would have been swallowed up a long time ago. So it's as I saw you running, I thought, oh, boy, because I'm not an insider in the political realm. But, you know, I interact with this world enough, you know, with writing and people that I know on the inside. It's like, oh, boy, here it comes. So, yeah, the lessons are intense. Raising the money, and the more your opponent raises, you have to raise it just for what? For ads? And then if they hit low, how do you respond? And
I think the other, you know, I mean, Trump is obviously a huge part of this too, because, you know, your name is intrinsically linked to him, for better or for worse. And I mean, in if I was running in Arkansas, or I was running in Oklahoma, or I was running in even Ohio, that might be helpful. Running in California, that's not helpful.
No, sir.
And so in the meantime, you know, the Republicans, they don't have a lot of money or resources out here. And so, you know, I don't know. I kind of want to, you know, my desire, if I could pick any color to run in, I would pick purple, you know, I'd pick royalty and not blue or red. But, you know, in California, you have seen, and we are experiencing, the destruction of a blue state that's been run like this for 40 years.
Yep.
And so there is a certain amount of angst that people are feeling with the wildfires and the, you know, the power getting shut off and the high taxes and the homelessness. And I mean, you don't run short of issues to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah, and clearly in all of these cases, the gospel, or simply sound biblical reasoning, has a solid solution. So in the midst of this, a friend sent me a song, a colleague, and said, well, you got to listen to this. Unfortunately, I don't have it ready to queue up and play, but it's a song calling on Christians to stand, to get involved. And this is an area where you can kind of rise above the political divide and get a message out to the whole church like you're used to doing. So how did this song come about, and what's the main message you were trying to communicate?
Well, I thought it'd be really fun to do, you know, the guys that, you know, ran my campaign and are continuing, you know, the endeavor of what we do moving forward, which, just to throw a shameless plug out there, we feel like we have a lot of national momentum. It didn't translate into the amount of votes that we needed locally, but we feel like that God's given us a national platform to speak into these issues, so we're continuing to develop that, and there'll be more announcements. So follow us, follow me on social media, and you'll find out what's to come. But you know, the guys that ran the race for me, they ran Dr. Ben Carson's race, presidential race, and really that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to was even willing to do this, because I really loved the way that Ben Carson ran his race. I really respected his approach. He was the only guy in the primaries that didn't attack Trump, and Trump didn't attack him. And you know, he raised $59 million, which was, and he was actually ahead of Trump in the primaries for a while. But one of the things they came to me and said was, "Hey, Sean, why don't you write a song that kind of carries your heart?" And I was like, "God, oh, that's so cheesy. Like I don't like I what kind of song do you want? Anything that gets political gets cheesy." And I thought, you know, maybe I'll just write one with my kids. Like, and maybe we can come up with like a kind of a jingle together and talk about like how we're just going to raise our voice, and let's sing about, you know, the marginalized, and let's sing about the forgotten, and let's sing about the unborn, and let's write a song about that. And then let me bring my kids into the studio, and in the last part of the song, in the chorus, let's have them sing. And so anyway, it ended up being really fun, like better than I could imagine. And that was the song "Raise Your Voice." And really the purpose was, is, you know, if we can get people to sing the values, it's amazing, you know, how songs go to places where sermons can never go. And if we get people to sing the values, if we get people to sing our campaign, it could go viral. So that was our heart behind it.
Well, you know why I have a special interest in that, Sean? And that's a great story. How old are your kids, by the way?
They're 9, 7, 5, and almost 2.
Okay, got it. What an amazing joint effort there. And of course, getting involved with this means that your wife is subject to the pressure and the rejection you go through. It is a family endeavor. But I wrote a book, came out a year ago, called The Power of Music, God's Call to Change the World One Song at a Time. And we'll send you a copy. We'll get contact info and send it to you.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
But I go through history, and I go through how music has had an impact, for good, for bad. I mean, I got into drugs because of rock music. I mean, that was part of my entree into that. And, you know, the classical music and the protest songs and folk music and civil rights songs, and then what the word says about it, to constantly inspire people like you, not that you needed it, but to people like you, in other words, influential songwriters, to say, hey, what if we could get a message out that impacts the nation, not just a worship song, but something with a message that'll stir hearts? Or if you can get people singing the same tune, you know, give peace a chance, you know, you get the tune out there, you get the words out there, it has massive impact. So if regardless of everything else that's happened, a song came out of this calling on Christians to raise their voice. So what's the name of the song again?
It's called "Raise Your Voice."
All right. So friends, check it out on YouTube, "Raise Your Voice." Check out what Sean is doing. Again, last name spelled F-E-U-C-H-T. And I'm glad to hear that you're moving forward, that this initial defeat was a learning experience, and you're moving forward. We've got 1 minute. How can we pray for you, Sean?
You know, I think just, I would love it if you guys could pray that we could just accurately steward the momentum of this campaign. You know, we had one of the largest social media presences of a congressional race in America. And we had people all over the world that were jumping into the political world because of this race. And so we just want wisdom and guidance on how to move forward and what that all looks like. And love you guys to get behind us and pray for us.
Awesome. Hey, Sean, I was so surprised to see your name come up in this context, and so thrilled to see it happening. Let this be a paradigm shift. Let us make a difference in every area of culture through our gospel values, including the realm of politics and government. God bless you, man. May he keep you safe and strong. Can't wait to see what the future holds. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, friends, we are out of time. And what can I say? Maybe God wants you to get involved in your school board. Maybe some local office. Maybe somewhere you can serve, make a difference, just bring your values in. Maybe the Lord's calling you to do that.